sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends, though the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, hey, hey. 2021.
Hey, shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up!
You cannot talk!
Welcome, bienvenue to a special episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, aka Le Grand Papa B, aka Gaston Lenoir. Let me just get to the point. Today's episode is a special episode, mainly because it ends with, for those who've been listening to previous episode, it's the one where I finally share, I got off my ass and edited half of the interview I did with Habib Siam, right? Habib Siam is a comedian, Lebanese-Canadian comedian who I had an insightful conversation with, and look, full disclosure, man, I'll be honest with you. I released part one because I'm still working on part two. And I realized that from my old days, it's not that I hate editing a podcast. I hate remembering that I still haven't edited a podcast. I have a podcast and every once in a while it leads to procrastination. So to fight in the war against procrastination, I ended up splitting it up in two parts. So what you're getting from this episode, 183, is the first part of our interview. Now, let me just go through my notes. Yeah, anyways, I'm just going to go through my notes and say that two parts could be... Yeah, man, yo, bottom line is two comedians. Well, actually, one comedian. The other one is a half comedian and half podcaster shooting the shit. So before I ramble on, I'm just going to say that hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it for y'all. Well, actually, it's for ourselves, but yeah. Hope you enjoy it. And as like I said, part two is on the way. All right. Here we go. I'm going to ask, when you first started comedy, I want you to think about either a person or something someone did for you that till this day you still remember. And I'm starting to develop this philosophy about comedy. It's like you know how it takes a village to raise a child, and yeah. I'm starting to think it takes a village of comedians to raise another comedian. Because I'm thinking of the supportive folks. You know what I mean? And it was just in their character. They weren't trying to like get props. It was just in their instinct to be, hey, tighten this up and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna ask you to think about that moment, and I'm gonna tell you mine, right? Bro, I still remember the first time you and I met, and I think it was Sean Carson who introduced us. So shout out to Sean Carson. You remember, okay?
And Sean's in Montreal now, man.
He is?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Oh man, yeah.
We shared a stage in December, man. When I moved back, we did a show together in December. I love that dude, man.
Oh man, tell him, right? You know, he's good people, man. He's on
very,
my list.
Very
of...
kind, very kind heart, very great family. Let's not make this about Sean. This
is my time. tell him what's up. Yeah. I gotta come to you. It was in
Crocker,
and I remember.
We don't say that name.
Right? Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, I'm
fucked up. No, I'm just messing with you, man.
No, here's the funny part. You were in the middle of explaining, and I'm going to paraphrase, right? And this is not an impression of you, but the way it came off to me, it was like, yo, man, Ottawa sucks. Hey, yo, because I made a joke about the national anthem where instead of saying our home in native land, I said our home on native land.
Yeah.
Bro, you have no idea. At that moment, I'm like, finally, a fucking comic who gets what I'm trying to do with this comedy shit.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, we were talking, I think you mentioned how you were into hip hop and things like that, but it was like, I felt like, okay, a connection.
Yeah.
Fast forward, we know each other. This is still early days. And I remember, I think, yeah, you were still in Montreal. And I remember messaging you, hey, I'm thinking of doing some shows in Montreal. And, you know, do any open spots? Bro, you came back with a book, with a calendar. And I didn't realize it then. Because most comics are like, you know, hey, whatever, here's a link, whatever. Google's your friend and shit like that. No, you did the research. And I was like, oh. You know, it meant a lot. It meant a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man.
What's sad is I didn't do any of the shows because I hadn't been in Montreal. But the gesture, I still remember that. And it gave me a sense of this is a community. You know what I mean? The few comics will make you feel like this is a community. And I was going to say, okay, so we talked about it earlier, is how that one time, and this is part of why part of the connection is when I heard you say, talking to my therapist, or if I was in therapy, basically he's not shy about therapy, right?
Yeah.
And then all this to say is like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage. Habib, so yeah. good people, you know, good people. So let's just start fresh. I mean, with the general here, man. When we were booking this, I remember you saying, I'm going to be in Ottawa. And I didn't pay attention that you were doing a tour. It's only when I went on your Instagram and I saw all the dates.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
First, I got to start is, how was the tour? How do you feel about
the tour? It was an incredible experience, man. It was an incredible experience from a comedy standpoint. But what I wasn't expecting was how transformative of a run it was on a personal level. Because this was very, so this is the first, I shouldn't say the first project, but like a couple of years ago, I was signed to like a chain of clubs. I was signed to an agency when I first started comedy.
Okay.
It was almost like working for a company, man. Like you kind of, you're trying to get in, and there's like a clear progression of steps to go through. Okay, first, you know, you do the open mics at the club, and then you get the open, and then you get the middle, and then you get the headline. There's a hierarchy almost. I hate to call it that. And with that is almost like a path to follow. Like you kind of know what the end goal is, but I was very fortunate, man, in my comedy trajectory that I got to start headlining clubs fairly early.
Okay.
And then I think about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, coming out of the pandemic, really, man, the pandemic gave me the opportunity to just slow down.
Okay.
And finally reflect. When the pandemic hit, I think I'd been active for like five and a half years.
Were? Okay.
Yeah, just that's it, man. I haven't been doing comedy that long. Uh-huh. But I'd been headlining for 2 years. I started headlining clubs like 3.5 years. I headlined the company that you mentioned. I headlined their Toronto. I headlined their Toronto club like 3.5 years into comedy. Uh-huh. And that was a very quick progression, and everything happened so fast that it was just, man, you get told these things like, okay, jokes, be undeniably funny, make everyone laugh, and all of these comedy cliches that as a young comic, you kind of just kind of go by. The pandemic gave me the time to just breathe a little bit, figure out like who I wanted to be as a comic, what I wanted to do with comedy.
Right.
And coming out, I started to build, like I had a vision for what I wanted to do, and I started to build on that.
Okay.
And I think about a year into that process, I realized that clubs were just not the ideal environment for what I wanted to build. Mm.
Okay.
And also from a financial standpoint, it's not tenable, man. I was headlining for a year straight coming out of the pandemic, and I got like a substantial amount of work. And man, I'm not gonna throw numbers out there, but at the end of the year when I got my T4, I was like, this can't be it, man.
Oh shit.
I
The
was like,
T4, you
this
filled out
can't.
T4s. Oh wow.
I'm filling out T4s, man, but I didn't hit 5 figures.
I see.
I was under 10,000 for a year of headlining. I was under 10K. And I did, and okay, you're doing indie shows and you're doing this on the side and you're whatever. So you're supplementing and padding. But like, I was like, okay, man, I'm headlining full time. Like, I went to Calgary, Edmonton, Halifax. I was taking planes. I was like, okay, let's add a 50% workload and a 50% like raise due to seniority over time. I'm like, I'm still capping off at under 20. And I'm like, man, you can't make a comfortable living that way. And that's when I broke off. That's when I broke off. And I was like, no, man, I got to start producing my own shows. I got to start renting my own venues and seeing what that does. And so last year I did a three show run in Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa. And there were kind of two, I wanted to explore two things with that. I wanted to explore how to learn how to self-produce, self-market, and sell a product. But also, on the other hand, develop a product that is very sellable. Because ultimately, man, I went with this. Sorry, this is a very long-winded way to
No,
get back to the tour. But I went with this idea. I'm like, yo, nobody knows who I am. Nobody in Canadian comedy draws. There's very few, I shouldn't say nobody, but there's very few people
Well,
that will draw.
English Canada,
For
Montreal, they
sure.
got
For
Quebec, they got
sure.
their shit together. Sorry.
Yo, there's a couple of young, and again, I don't want to say everybody, because there's a couple of young comics on the English side that are doing great for themselves, that have built audiences, that are able to, and I see that hustle and I see that grind and I respect it. But there's very few overall, there's very few people. Like, we were talking about, I don't want to put this comic's name out because he's a spectacular comic, and I don't want it to be taken the wrong way. But his name was mentioned. No, man, because his name
No,
was
sorry.
mentioned in Ottawa.
I didn't mean it. The reason I smirked is because we're gonna have a Cat William moment, but okay.
No,
I mess with
no,
you.
no, no.
I
Because
thinking,
I don't want to put this person's name out, because I don't want somebody, because I
Push,
have the world of love and respect for this
Oh,
person,
no,
right?
I'm being
But
funny.
they were like he was in Ottawa doing a show at a club, and 35 people came through.
Fucking Canadian
And I'm
Irish,
like,
man.
man, that is disrespectful to this man's ability and capability, and how long. Like, this guy's been grinding for 20 years, man. This dude is on TV. This dude is somebody that I will stop what I'm doing to watch, you know? And so it made me realize that if I can't sell on my name, I have to sell on a product. I went with this idea of, yo, you'll buy a book if you're interested in a story, but have never read the author, because it's the stories the pull. I'll watch a movie if the themes are interesting, if the story is interesting, even if I've never heard of the director or the actors. And so I was like, let's try that approach, man. And on top of it, Canada doesn't recognize comedy as an art form. Stand-up comedy is an art form, so we don't as comics, we don't qualify for like grants and funding. But if you do a one-person show, it qualifies as theater, which then makes you eligible for funding. And so I'm like, let me try to build something that's thematically coherent, because as a comic, when you're headlining, it's really, for the most part, honestly, and I don't want to speak on all comics, but like, my experience watching people and my approach to it was, yo, make them laugh for 45 minutes. You know, but no, this is thematic. So I did that three show run, man. It went super well. It gave me an idea of what I could make on a per show basis, you know, and it was so much more substantial. And I was like, this is the model. But I was very conscious of the fact that I did it in three cities that I had lived in. And so a lot of people, I had contacts, people had seen me do comedy. But then I was like, okay, this still isn't tenable, because how many shows in Ottawa can I do a year? How many shows in Toronto? I'm like, I'm going to have to go into markets that I've never been to. And to do that, I need to work with a promoter and I need to find somebody. And it took me about a year, man, to find the right person. He approached me, Himanshu Patel. Bless this man's heart, man. I have the world of love and appreciation for Himanshu. I met him as a comic. I know Himanshu originally from Montreal, but I met him in Toronto as a comedian. And then one day after a set, man, he came up to me. I was at Nubian Show. I had a monster set and he came up to me and we were talking and he was like, yo, I also run like a promotion company. I do comedy tours. I organize comedy tours. And so we started talking about what that would look like. We started talking about it. And in October, he planted the seed. I think we started talking about it properly in like January of this year. And I was looking at the fall, man. I was thinking like September, October, because I like to give things time. And he was like, I think we could do it in May. And so we kind of plotted it out, man, 12 cities, 13 cities, whatever it was. And a spectacular experience, man. A lot of learning along the way, some hiccups, some things we would have done differently. But for a first time out, man, for a first time out, I could not have asked for more.
Wait, I could not have asked. This tour? The one you just finished? Oh, man, it's amazing. So it's like you're reading my mind, because that's exactly what I wanted to – just to some context is I'm like a newer-ish comic and took a break on 2020. It's funny. We went different path. But I was going to – because, okay, I thought – so when I started comedy, I thought the only option was the club scene. And then someone opened my mind to what you're doing. You know know who's it's working out for him? Sugar Sammy.
I have mixed feelings. I mean, he's done very well for himself and good on him. His comedy is not entirely for me. His brother, whose name also, not to give this dude any shine, because again, man, I've spent so much time watching like what people are doing, but also the intention behind it. And And I think that's very important, man. It's very important for me, even if it takes longer, even if it makes you move slower, but to move with the right intention. And so I've seen promoters adopt this model. I've seen comics work with promoters. But the goal is just to sell tickets and make money. And a lot of those shows do sell tickets and are financially viable. But, man, I have a very distinct vision of what I want to build and who it's for. And working with Himanshu, and we were talking about this yesterday, man. I gave him so much credit for this, because I was like, you were able to draw the people that I needed and wanted in those seats. The audiences were diverse. There were white people, there were Arab people, there were, you know, there were all ages and everything. But it was people that I felt like the audience went in understanding what the show was going to be about and what my comedy was about.
Exactly.
Whereas at a club, man, at a club, they're not there to see you. They're just there to laugh. They probably Googled like their city's name and comedy show, and then the name of the club came up, and then
or they saw the club that are on a bus sign on the bus or something like that.
And these are people that are never gonna check for you after, and so
to that point, the reason whatever you are, what are you doing as a comic, whatever your path is, we're not shitting on people's path. I'm just saying what I've learned is I had a club owner telling me that, hey, just because you're black, you don't have to make black jokes. I'm like, fuck off, man. You know what I mean? So that's why I like this independent route. What's the name of your homie, the dude who helped you out, the promoter?
Himanshu Patel. And the company is called At Liberty Laughs Comedy. Give them a follow. The dude puts on amazing shows, very well curated.
I think he understands
comedy, man. We were outside after a show once, and somebody was like, another comic was like, oh, you guys should run this back and you should collaborate with this other. He dropped the name of like a slightly, not slightly, definitely more recognizable Lebanese comic. And he was like, you guys should just do the Lebanon tour and whatever. And man, without skipping a beat, Himanshu turned around and he's like, no, man, it's not that kind of show. And that let me know that this dude understands, because anybody else would have jumped on the bigger name and would have been like, I can leverage this bigger name. And any younger comic might have been, or most younger comics, and by younger, I just mean in terms of experience, not because I do consider myself like a very young comic, but any younger comic would have been like, yeah, I would love to roll with that bigger name
No doubt.
and by osmosis kind of like grab some of their clout or get some of their fan base or exposure or whatever. But that's not what it is, man.
Oh,
That really
man.
isn't what it is. That really isn't what it is.
This conversation is so amazing because I was just before I hit record, I was explaining to Habib and whoever listens to this podcast is used to it, how this podcast, Shut Up Podcast, has two edition, two eras. You know, the first era was called, I called it the Old Testament. This new era is called the New Testament. And by the way, my dad studied theology. My dad's a pastor. I'm a preacher's kid, hence all the
Oh, no way,
biblical
man. You
references.
have no, but you have a little bit of it in your cadence and whatever. I just assumed a little bit of hip hop, but it makes sense
All
now that
the
you
above.
mention it, you
But
know.
and so in this new era of Shut Up Podcast is I'm trying to be more real to myself. And I use the expression, I'm trying to not treat the audience like a chick I'm trying to bang. You know what I mean? So you're trying to, so on the old podcast, yes, what? Sugar Sam wants to do my podcast, but he's never heard of me and he's gonna roast me the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, or he's gonna, it's just a promote. You know what I mean? It's like, I would have had someone famous just for the clout. And on this one here, no, I would rather work with people that helps me work with the brand, like what I'm trying to do. And let's not deny us. Actually, you know what? I want to make some references to
Let's
Drake
also,
here.
let me just jump in. Let me just jump in and let's not shit too much on Sugar Sammy, because the guy is talented. He's
I'm
made
not.
a fantastic, fantastic career for himself. You know, I don't want this to be a bashing of anybody, because man, comedy's hard, and more power and more love to everyone that does what they want to do. But I had to, and that's what that 2 years was useful for, man. That 2 years in the pandemic help me realize what do I want to do and what do I not want to do, and then where's my limit? Like, what am I willing to compromise? What am I willing not to compromise, man? A big reason why I left that company, and Canada's very small, man. There's very like few opportunities, especially on the club scene, and I think there's three gatekeepers. I mean, I whatever, I could be wrong, but I think there's three gatekeepers in Canadian comedy. You know, if you think of like, if you think of like the club chain that you mentioned, Sirius XM that plays like the albums, you know, and then just for laughs, you know, just for laughs, CBC, like that TV, you know, exposure. That's it. That's very small. And as a market, man, when I realized this, it blew my mind, man, because I like crunching numbers, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I wonder how big this place is or how big that place is. And I realized that Canada is the size of Europe,
Okay.
but
Canada's
it's half,
Oh,
but
the
it's
continent.
half, but yeah, Canada as a country is more or less the size of Europe as a continent, but it's half the population of France. You know, so can you imagine taking the people in France, cutting it by half, and spreading them out? Oh, it's a very small market, man. It's a very small market. But ultimately, I had to reflect on what I was willing to compromise, what I wanted to build, and like try to attract like-minded individuals that vibed with the same philosophy. And with that club, man, recently they ran a fundraiser for the Friends of the IDF. And I was like, yeah,
Word.
in the middle of a genocide, these dudes are
Wow.
sending money, you know, to the IDF. Yeah. Like, I don't even, like, I understand, like, you want to send it to Israel and to, like, humanitarian aid and people that are suffering, cool, like, you, that's your prerogative, you know, but to the actual IDF, man, and I was like, and I was like, that's not something canceled all of.
These dudes are bragging about the killing they're doing, you know what I mean? It's one thing when when they were throwing the whole, we're defending ourselves. Nah, we're being cruel. You know what I mean? Fuck these niggas. Canceled, you know what I mean? It's all the
canceled.
Awesome. Yeah,
canceled all of my shows and was like, I can't work with you as a company anymore. Yeah. And that was that. And that's why I refused to, like, you know, put their name on wax or give them any kind of visibility.
Hey.
And but those were and a few people were like, good on you, you know, stand by your morals. A few people like, nah, man, just like let it blow over. Whatever, get yours, do what's good for you. It's and I'm job. Like, man.
Yeah,
it is a job, but also, man, at some point, there has to be something more important than what you're chasing.
Right?
You know, like there has to be something. It can't all be about you and your dream and what you want, especially when, quite frankly, that dream is very inconsequential. You know, like, cool, if I blow up as a comedian and become world famous and do what I want to do, I mean, at best, I'm using my comedy to educate people and to make people think. That's at best, which is not a bad outcome.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not out here saving lives, man. I'm not working for the Red Cross. I'm not a doctor. I'm not like an former educator. But the teachers, the people that are doing the real work, man.
Right.
And
so the real
I try to keep that in context and in perspective as much as I can.
I'm very curious. Okay. Okay. You said everything that I thought about, but I'm just gonna switch a little bit. Right. Let's get into a bit of history. Before we get to a bit of history. Right. Now, on one of your you mentioned how you have a PhD, and you ended up in comedy. So, what's the story? What came first? The PhD or the open mic?
The chicken or the egg?
Right.
Man, I don't have my comedy trajectory is not one of, I've always wanted to do comedy or I've always been a fan of comedy, man. Like, you know, from a kid, from listening to albums on tape. I think the first special I actually watched, because before we used to play, like, it was audio, man.
Right.
It was audio, but like the first special I think I actually watched was Eddie Murphy, man. Like
Delirious,
you know?
Or Raw?
Yeah, Delirious.
Yeah,
Delirious.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then Raw, and then Raw, and then whatever. But
yeah.
And so from then, man, like just growing up, I grew up around comedy a lot. Sketch comedy is very big in Lebanon. Like stand-up comedy is blowing up in Lebanon now, but I would say as a formal organized scene, it's maybe 6 years old. You know, we're very rooted in Lebanon.
Oh, okay,
but we're very rooted in storytelling and in sketch comedy and in theater. Like that's our, you know, those are our comedic outlets. And so those are my influences growing up. But I never had a mind of I want to be a stand-up comic, you know, that was never. And then honestly, man, like coming out of the PhD, I was 35. My first year out of graduate school, I couldn't find a job.
Okay.
Right. You know, I was going through a very rough breakup and I couldn't find a job. So on a personal level, I was very depressed.
Right.
And on a professional level, I felt like everything I had worked for was not bearing fruit, man. And this is not what you don't think that as a doctor, you can come out with a good amount of like work experience and I'm well traveled and I speak languages and whatever, blah, 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 blah. I thought getting a job would be a lot easier. And after a year of trying, I got to a point where I was applying for jobs that I didn't want. But obviously, man, you have financial obligations. You got to pay rent. You got to make money.
Yeah.
You know, I was working all of these like contracts, like side teaching on contract. Mm-hmm. I was doing translation for CBC. Like they would send they would send me footage that was taken in the Middle East and I would have to translate for the subtitles.
Okay.
I was doing things like that. But man, I didn't get a PhD to do patchwork income. You know, I didn't get a PhD to be applying for a job and be like, man, I really need the money, but I know I would be miserable doing this job.
Damn.
And that's when I hit the handbrake a little bit. And I was like, listen, man, this is not going to end well. Like, I don't want to look back at my life in 10 years and be like, how do I end up here, man? How do I end up at this job I don't like, with a person I don't love, with a, because I've seen that, man. I've seen my uncles go through it. I've seen like family go through it, where you're like, oh man, I flushed it all the way. And so I had to sit back. I took a step back and I was like, yo, in an ideal world, no bills, no responsibilities, nothing. Forget all of that. You can do anything you want to do. What would it be?
What would it be?
And I couldn't answer that question, man. And it gave me a moment of, holy fuck, what am I chasing? I realized that what I was chasing was everything that had always been conditioned into me, man. Like I come from a family where, on my dad's side at least, my dad was the first person in his family to go to university.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I'm the first person in my family to go to graduate school. And so from a kid, I was always told like school, school, schooling,
School.
education, my grandma, like it. And so I didn't think. I just kept going. I kept going. I kept
All
going.
of
And
us.
then I was like, okay, job, keep going. You follow that, you're on that hamster wheel. And I'm like, man, I don't even know what I want. And so I did, there was these couple of projects. I'd always wanted to run a podcast. I'm big into sneakers. I ran a sneaker podcast project with a boutique here in Montreal called Off the Hook. And that was great. That was like creatively, because I was very deeply depressed, man. And that creative project helped me kind of snap out of my depression. It gave me something to do and it
Good to
gave me
hear.
some kind of structure. I got to interview people. I got to do photo shoots. I got to do write-ups because it was a very interactive series. And then I was like, man, I've always wanted to try stand up. Like not always, but like I've always thought, I like stand up, man. I'm like, I think I could be good at it. Why not try,
You want to
And then
try?
I'll,
Just
yeah.
one quick thing. You've taught before that, right? So you had
Yes,
no
yeah.
problem speaking in front of an audience. That's
No, man, I've taught in auditoriums. I've taught in small classes as small as like 15 to 20, and I've taught in auditoriums as big as 125, 150. And I've given talks at conferences. The public speaking aspect, it was never an issue.
Was
I
never
was
an
just
issue.
like, yeah. And I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoy radio, man. I enjoy doing radio. I enjoyed the podcast. I enjoy talking to people. And I'm like, this could be something very interesting. I had also heard Dave Chappelle say something, man, that resonated with me very much before I started comedy.
Bring it down.
I think it was Dave Chappelle, honestly. I could be misquoting, but something to the effect of, comedy is the only thing that you is one of the only things that you could do where you could use everything you know and everything you're interested in. And that resonated with me. And it's true, because you want to go up and talk about like politics, you can talk about politics, you can talk about race, you can talk about philosophy, you can talk about dumb shit, you could talk about, And I thought that hit me because, man, everything I've done, I felt like I've only been able to use a small part of what I'm interested in, or what I, like, because in class you can bring certain things, you can't bring everything. You could do this, but you can't do that. You could, and so I was like, let's try this, man. And I fell in love from the jump.
So
There was no easing into it.
from your first
My
open mic, you
first
fell in
open
love.
mic, man, I just started. I saw it's funny how this worked. I knew that I started telling people I wanted to do stand up. Because I figured if I tell people, then people will hold me accountable. Like, oh, you, what happened? You said you were going to, that was the first step. And then I just started, I was in Montreal. I didn't know how to go about this, man. I didn't know. I was like, where are there, what, how do you do this? What is there? Oh, I started Googling like comedy Montreal, and I would literally, I was calling places. There was no social media at the time. I wasn't on social media, man. I joined social media for stand up. But I would call places. If I found an email address, I would email places. And then I just forgot. I just forgot, man. Like a week later, I get a call from the Comedy Nest. And I still remember, man. It was Jason, this dude called Jason Hattrick, who called me on a Sunday. On a
Like a
Sunday, on a Sunday at 6 p.m. And I didn't even know. He was like, "Yo, it's Jason. Hi, this is Jason from the Comedy Nest." And I was like, "Yeah, and like, who? What the hell?" You know? And he was like, "Yeah, you emailed about spots for the open mic." And I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, man." And he was like, "I'm just calling to let you know you have a spot on Wednesday." And I'm
What?
like this Wednesday in 3 days? And he goes, "Yeah, you got 5 minutes." And I had, dude, I had not written a thing.
You
I
don't have a
had
bit.
nothing. I had nothing. I got nothing. I got nothing. And there was a part of me that was like, "Oh man, should I tell this dude?
You know what
Should
I
I
mean?
tell
Wrong
this
number.
dude
Click."
I need no." I didn't think that, but I thought, let me ask this dude if I can get on next Wednesday. Let me give myself 10 days, you know? And I was like, "Yo, if I do that, I'm not getting on.
I hear that.
If I do that, that's the beginning of my brain negotiating with myself
Talking you
to get
down.
out of this. Yeah, to get out of this." And so I was like, "All right, cool, man." I was like, "Cool, man, let's do
And
this."
you did it.
And I wrote 5 minutes and practiced it in 3 days.
Oh wow,
And
bro. That's amazing.
went and did it and went and did it. And like, yo, I haven't gone back and listened to it, so I don't know how it went. But in how it felt good. I went outside. Dude, I went outside after the set and I cried. I cried because it was such a cathartic release. Because I was like, man, I've been depressed for a year. I've been chasing. And I'm like, I'm depressed for a year at 35, man. So I know, like, okay, push yourself to work out, eat right, you know, keep pushing through it, play the tape through, don't idealize this, you know, da 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 da. I'm not, but I was still mopey, man. I was still mopey. And it finally felt like I was like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. And right away, man, right away, I started talking to the comics there. I was like,
Meet friends, okay.
where else can I do this?
What?
What other bars, what other venues, what other? And right away, I started hitting like three to four mics a week, three to four mics a week, every week. And it is Montreal, so it's a very small scene. It's a fairly small scene, and you do max out at about four sets a week. Like, I was doing the max amount possible, and I did that for 2 years. Did about 400 sets my first 2 years, and I started getting better, man. I started to see the progression. I was starting to get a little bit of traction here in Montreal. Like, people recognize you as somebody that's working hard, that's improving, starting to put you on better shows. And I got a job in Toronto, man. I finally, after 2 years of
From
being unemployed.
Montreal, you got a job in Toronto?
Yeah, I got a
Oh,
job in Toronto, and I didn't want to move yet because I felt comfortable in Montreal, man. I was happy in Montreal, but I think that's the one thing. I don't like feeling comfortable. As soon as I feel comfortable, I'm like, it's time for, because comfort breeds, in my opinion, comfort breeds complacency.
Jesus Christ.
And then and complacencey stunts growth. And so I
Man.
like to put myself in uncomfortable positions, man. Even on stage, I'll do any show. Not so much anymore, but man, I've done shows in the middle of a weed fair that was in a horse barn in Niagara, man. I've done
One
half
of
an
the
hour
shows, I saw
with
one of
like
the shows you
these.
were at, the stage was like, it might have been in New Brunswick. The stage was like, I'm not sure if it was a barn, but it was an interesting stage. It was being supported. I don't know if it was like a keg or,
Oh, yes, it was, because that show was at a brewery. So behind me, those silver things is the actual, like, you know, I don't know the technical term, but beer connoisseurs, you know. So I was gonna call them vats, but whatever they brew the beer in.
Okay,
But
so you've been, yeah, all over
I
the
ended
place.
up going to Toronto, man. I ended up going to Toronto for the job. I knew I would have to get out of Montreal eventually. And honestly, man, as I think it was the best move for me
No,
comedically, you know, until it ran its course, and now I'm back in Montreal, you know, so.
Hey, dude, it's an amazing story. Essentially, what I was trying to get out is, and you brought it up, right? We mentioned it, it's because for me, I think it's a magic moment for any comic, for at least for me, it is, when they basically give the middle finger to the fear of public speaking or being in front of an audience and just do it. And for you, you were already comfortable with it. So
yes and no, man. I was comfortable with public speaking. So things like how to address an audience.
Right.
There's two things, man. How to address an audience and how to speak to a group of people that right. I, you know, just like it's very different conditions on stage, man. It took me a year to figure out how to hold a microphone.
Okay.
It took me a year. I don't know how to hold a mic, man. Right, you don't. Right, right. You used to like, you know, the lights, yeah. you know, blaring, and you're not being a lot of times not being able to see the audience and having to fake right. that, you know, things like that,
right.
and the expectation of laughter.
I was, yeah, exactly.
Because there funny. Is an expectation. There is an expectation that the audience needs to laugh, and I think yeah. honestly, letting go of my attachment to the laughter. Because as comics, you chase the laugh. As comics, we yeah. all, coming up, we all yeah. chase the laugh. Uh-huh. To the point where if they don't laugh at a joke or at a line or at a whatever, inherently, I would speed my pace to get to the next laugh point as a younger comic. And now yeah. I don't care as much anymore, man.
Yeah.
There's a level of confidence. There's a level of confidence that I have a few jokes in my back pocket. I can shift mm-hmm. things around and I can make people laugh if I really need it, mm-hmm. if I really need to break that tension. Mm-hmm. But also, like, we'll get there, man. It's fine. Yeah. And that's just, yeah. I've just embraced that. That's just what my comedy is.
Yeah.
And it's not for everyone. And man, if you want to make a case that it's not punchy enough, that yeah. it's not this, then that's cool too, man.
Yeah.
But I guarantee it's got substance.
What I love about what you just said is that because you're expressing a maturity in comedy. I remember my early days in comedy. It was like if people didn't laugh, my whole self-esteem
yeah,
was affected
yeah,
by it. I feel like it was the equivalent of being rejected by a girl.
Absolutely,
fuck you, man.
No, because you have to recognize that on some level you're doing it for validation.
Yeah.
But I let go of that because there's this school of thought, man, yeah. that like it's always on the comic, that there's no such thing as a bad audience, you know? Mm. And that's something I go back and forth with a lot of people on, very different opinions. I'm able to now differentiate between when it's me. I know right. when I'm having a bad performance, man. I know when I'm off. Mm. I know when my rhythm is just a tad off, when I'm not as like snappy or sharp.
Yeah.
I know that, and I will 100% like cop to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just a bad audience.
Sometimes
fuck them, man. I heard a comic say this, and it was fantastic because he was like, yo, sometimes you guys be bombing as an audience.
That's hilarious.
You know,
I compared it to a Tinder date. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, like
sometimes
like
it can be a bad match.
Yeah, not for nothing, man. Yeah, I don't think the Ottawa show that you came to and saw the last show of the tour, I don't think that was like a bad show.
Hmm.
I think it was the worst show of the tour, easily. You know, but. Yo, I had three separate audience members, like from separate groups,
okay.
you know, not together. Three
yeah,
separate
yeah.
people at different instances
yeah.
come up to me after the show and apologize for the audience.
Oh, wow.
They were like, hey, we're sorry. We're sorry the audience was like not as responsive or cold because you were you did what you had to do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so it's a balance, man. It's a balance. But there's also... So,
there's
a bunch of things. I don't know. My brain's going in a million directions. there's a couple of things, man. Like, and this circles back to the initial question you asked about like somebody doing like an act of kindness or an act of support.
Yeah,
you know, like supporting you early on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a comic in Toronto. There's a Toronto-based comic called Gilson Lubin.
Gilson Lubin. Oh, I don't. Yeah. St. Vincent, no, hold on a second.
Yeah.
But he's legendary. He's been doing it for a while. Yeah.
Gilson
Lubin.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah. Who you talking about?
Gilson is a phenomenal comic and a saint of a human being.
Oh, really? Eh?
What a kind heart, man. And I met Gil my first year in comedy. Uh-huh. He was coming in from Toronto to Montreal to like do a couple of headline shows.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of connected and we stayed in touch. And then I was like, yo, man, because you keep hearing this thing in comedy, like, oh, perfect your seven, get your best seven, your best this, your best five, your best. And so as a first year comic, that's kind of what I was working towards. And I shared a set with him, man. I shared a 7-minute set. And like, this is a dude that has like so much seniority over me that I don't know that well, that I'd only met like once or twice. And I was like, yo, man, would you mind? I don't like, I respect and value your time, but would you mind taking a look at this and giving me like a bit of pointers?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so he kept postponing. He kept being like, okay, yeah, I'll get back to you next week. And he would follow up. He would message next week, be like, I was super busy. I was da 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 da. And I was like, man, this dude is not gonna get to it, and that's fine. And then one day he's like, yo, can you give me a call? Like, this is my number, give me a call. Man, this dude gave me an hour and a half breakdown on a 7-minute set.
Wow. He did
This
his homework.
dude
He
put,
did do
put it, but this
it.
dude put the work in, and that meant the world to me, man. That meant the world to me, because for somebody to give that much attention, somebody that I loved and respected. And so I remember being at a mic with Gilson in Toronto. And first of all, I was like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Okay, an open mic or just
Yeah, man, an
okay.
open mic. This is a national
Fucking Canada's
headliner
like that. Yeah, I know. I've seen that happen.
popping into a Thursday open mic with no
I've
audience.
seen that.
And he was like, yeah, I got to get the work in, man. And that showed me also that as a comic, you're never above any show, man. Like, you can never. And there was a time, like a couple of years ago, where I was struggling a little bit creatively, and I was having a hard time getting booked on shows and shows that I wanted to get on. And I went back, man. I remember that moment with Gil, and I went back and started hitting open mics, man. I was out there with first year comics, and it reconnected me with why I do comedy, because you lose sight of it, man. You start chasing these goals, and you forget, as corny as it sounds, why you started doing comedy. But anyway, long end of it, man, is Gilson told me something in that moment. He was like, and I was like, what the fuck you're talking about, man? He was like, listen, when you get on stage, you can't always aim to kill. You can't always
Message.
aim to do well. And I was like, man, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. What do you mean? Like, I want laughs. I want to do well.
What do you mean,
And he's
don't do
like,
my best?
and he's like, but he said, I'm not telling you not to do your best, but I'm telling you the goal can't always. And I was like, man, I don't get it. You need to break this down for me. And I love what he said. He was like, no, man, you'll figure it out, or you won't. You might choose to disagree. You might choose to disagree. It might make sense, it might not. And then, man, it took like a year and a half or 2 years, and I was like, oh fuck, I see what he's saying. You can't revert back, man. If your goal is to get laughs all the time, and if your goal is to like murder on stage all the time, if it doesn't go well, or if you're not getting laughs, or if you're working out like a new bit or a new joke or a new idea, and your goal is to chase that laugh, that dopamine rush, you're gonna go back to what's safe. And ultimately, you're not gonna grow, and you're not gonna push the boundaries, and you're not gonna try out new things. And so, yeah, that's
It's
that.
before I forget, because I missed Gilson is from St. Lucia. I said St.
Yeah.
Vincent, and Caribbean folks
Okay.
don't like fucking messing up where their country of origin. Yeah, St. Lucia. All right, okay. Sorry, you were saying.
No, that was it, man. That was the
No, I thank you for sharing
those were
that,
the beginning stages of
man.
like reconceptualizing how I approach comedy, man.
I'm gonna end here on this on the thought of reconceptualizing comedy. It's a wild journey interview. It's a journey interview. I didn't think to bring up how I connected to the idea of playing it safe with comedy during my I don't want to call it final days, but before I got on this long break into comedy, I was. During those days before I got to that point, I was playing it safe. I was only going to my set list. I was addicted to laugh, and I didn't want to do anything to disturb those laugh, which including using the same creativity that got me, that made me, that I started with in comedy. So it's interesting. I guess maybe some of us just need to go through a phase of, we all need to go through a phase of born again. Being baptized in the blood of comedy Jesus. Comedy black Jesus, yeah. Choose your Jesus. All right, okay, I'm going to end here. So I'm going to end part one. This concludes part one. And hope you enjoyed it as much as Habib and I enjoyed recording it. As always, if you have any thoughts that you want to share with us, share with me, you can holler at me, or you could go to shutuppodcast.com, like usual, or email me at shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. What else? I had written this shit down, and I can't find my notes, but fuck it, I'm freestyling. Yeah, so like I said, end of part one, stick around, who am I kidding? At some point, when I get off my ass, I will have part two. So professionally, I'll have part two available at some point. Yeah. All right. Okay. Enjoy your day, folks, or enjoy your week. And a plus, one love, and peace.